All lines are now bridged.
Okay, thank you, operator. Good morning, everybody. I'm Mike Berry with ONC, and I'd like to welcome you all to the U.S. CDI Task Force. We really appreciate you joining us today. I'm going to get started with roll call. We have a pretty packed agenda today, and I'm going to start with our co-chairs. Stephen Lane.
I am here. Good morning.
Leslie Kelly Hall.
I'm here. Thank you.
Ricky Bloomfield.
Good morning. I'm here.
Hans Butendike.
I'm here.
Grace Cordovano.
I'm here. Good morning.
Jim Gerges.
I'm here.
Ken Kawamoto. Les Leonard. Glenn McDonald. Aaron Meary. Brett Oliver. Mark Savage.
Good morning here.
Michelle Schreiber has a conflict today, so she won't be joining us. Sasha Termott.
Good morning.
Andrew Truscott.
Present.
Cheryl Turney.
Morning.
Dan Breeman.
Good morning.
Denise Webb.
Good morning.
Good morning to all. All right, thank you all, and I'll turn it over to Stephen and Leslie.
Thank you so much, I got my camera working today, so that's a good thing. welcome everybody, and welcome Leslie to your first meeting as official co-chair. Leslie and I had a chance to meet prior to today's meeting on a number of occasions, I think our plan is that I'm going to do most of the voiceover co-chair roles, and she's going to watch for hand raising and help to manage the conversation. So again, thank you all for showing up. This is our agenda. We're actually going to modify it slightly. That fifth bullet where it says tasks 1, B, and C, I think what we're going to try to focus on is tasks 1, A, and B, and try to finish those up as best we can, because we do have a presentation to make next week to the HITACC with our progress to date. And it seems to us that it makes sense to deliver our near final recommendations related to tasks 1A and B, and then come back and focus on 1C in our final presentation to the HITACC in April. So unless anyone, including Al, has a concern about that, we'll make that slight change to the agenda. Hearing no concerns, we'll forge ahead. All right, so let's go on in the slide deck here. I apologize. We can stay here. So past meeting notes, just to remind people, we have been working on the notes. We've got a four-part process for reviewing them, so they're taking a little while, but we've got the notes from our last three meetings up and posted for your review. You can access those again by going to the ONC's HITACC calendar, going to the date of interest, clicking on the link, and then when you open that up, you will see a lot of material from each of our meetings, including the agenda, the slides, the meeting transcript, the audio recording, as well as now meeting notes once those are completed. So we've got the notes up through our first three meetings. February 16th is now posted, last week not yet posted, but even for last week, you've got access to the meeting transcript and audio as needed. And again, we're not formally approving notes, but we are inviting people to review them. That was part of your homework, and to bring forward any comments or concerns. So did anybody find anything of concern or questions related to the notes that they've had a chance to review? Great. Al, did you want to add anything related to the notes?
I don't have anything else.
we're not asking for people to go study and memorize all of the notes, just to look for anything just to help refresh their memory. It's not meant to be a reading assignment.
Great. And I appreciate that. Sorry, was that a comment? Okay. I appreciate that some task force members are not able to get on Adobe Connect just yet. Jim, I think I noticed you were on audio, but not on Adobe. And then some folks have joined us since roll call, including Clem and probably some others. So welcome everybody. Okay, so I think the next item up was going to be a little bit of a US CDI overview. And I think this is where we were going to ask Al to jump in and try to kind of recontextualize all of this for us, just to make sure we're all on the same page. I think a lot of the commentary that's been coming up in our task force discussions really has to do with, you know, what does this mean? Where is it going? How is this going to fit in with the industry? You know, why are we really here? And we felt that it would be a good idea for Al, you know, who's really taken ownership of this work at the ONC, to come and sort of recontextualize it. So Al, you want to take us through that?
Sure. Thanks, Stephen. I'm going to share my screen, and I'll incorporate these slides into the main body of the slides. You sent them out as a separate attachment. We'll have them posted afterwards. Let me see if I'm doing this right. Let me see, what am I doing here? Okay, so thank you, Stephen. A couple things that I wanted to cover is, first of all, where we're at in the process. This may sound kind of elementary, but I want to just as a quick reminder about where we're at in the process. Up until the end of October or the very beginning of November of last year, we were in the submission and review process for submissions that would be considered for inclusion of US CDI version 2. That period, that submission period ended in October. And as a result, new ideas, new submissions for what could go into US CDI version 2 ended then. And so we went through that process over the fall, the end of the fall and into the winter. The draft prep period, which is when we published, and then we published the draft V2 on the 12th of January of this year. And then we entered the public comment period. So this public comment period is on the submissions that were received up until the end of October. And it is the ideas for new submissions are going to be submissions that are going to be considered for version 3. And I just say that because we have to draw the line somewhere about when submissions were needed to be coming in. And so that's where we're at. We're in the public comment period of the submission, of the submissions that came in under V2.
Al, if I can just add to that to say that mm-hmm. a lot of the comments that we've been getting from task force members really have had to do with things that they would love to have seen in version 2, but that weren't even submitted. So it's really important to realize that, yeah, that there's an opportunity to keep submitting new data classes and elements, and that opportunity right. exists today, but it's not something that this task force is focusing on.
Well, it's not something that ONC is focusing on right now. We have the submission system is open for business, but the stuff that's being submitted into the other than the comments on old submissions, the stuff that's being submitted will be considered this fall for inclusion in version 3. Thank you for that clarification, Stephen. So we've seen this, and the thing that jumps out, this is the draft version 2, and what jumps out to me and to most everybody else is how little has been added. And we did that on purpose for a variety of reasons we've already explained. I can touch on them again. But the reality is we have, well, I'll talk about the why, but this is I think everybody would agree that this is a very modest change or modest addition of required data elements for the next version. So kind of this is,
Jeff, this sorry, is Clem. I just want to, just some clarification. So there were some intermediate versions of USCDI that had stuff in it that I think was a hip fake, misled people, so there's no need to submit for something that was in it, but it disappeared. So I think there's a problem with that.
Clem, I want to clarify what you're asking, but maybe we could do it offline, and if we need to clarify it to the whole task force, we can. I think that we talked last time about something that ONC published back in 2018 called the draft USCDI. That was more of a guiding document or of a white paper about what our intentions were. A lot of things have changed since we published that, but that should not have been considered to be what USCDI is. It was really a document for everybody to get an idea about what we were planning on doing with this new data set called USCDI.
I thought there was one in December, and there are things on it that no one would have submitted because it looked like it was already sort of on the way.
So I'm not sure what you're referring to. We published all of the submissions were made available, made public as they came in. And those were posted on the level two page, the level two tab. And then from that level two set, we picked the new data elements to go into version two, draft version two.
Okay. Well, I'll come back. I'll maybe offline, but I think there was some miscueing of submitters when they saw stuff that was already there that they didn't need to submit it.
Okay. Yeah, and if we need to fix it, fix the process for next time, that's one of the reasons we're here.
So Stephen Kennedy has a question.
Okay, I'm not tracking the hands raised. So,
right, Andy has a question for you.
Fantastic. Just a quick question on this last bullet point on here. It's relevant to information blocking until 2022, but not after. Is that the right sentiment? I would have thought that it's relevant to information blocking full stop, and in October 2022, it's not just USCDI, it's a whole bunch of other stuff.
Right. Yeah, and I did want to talk about that because info blocking is top of mind to a lot of people that are trying to implement USCDI.
But the danger you have is that the sentiment of that bullet point is, well, USCDI is only relevant up until October 2022, which is not
the case.
No, it's
just relevant. It's more it specifies what constitutes info blocking until October. So yeah,
we all get that. But that bullet point could lead the less informed to believe otherwise.
Point well taken, Andy. Yeah, we could rephrase that.
It basically defines info blocking. It's the content that would constitute info blocking. That's the definition for info blocking until October 22. Is that a better way to say it, Andy?
It's we can tweak that sentence. Given these slides are in the public domain, we probably want to clarify.
Yeah, but so I wanted to go back. So thank you for that. Go ahead. Is there somebody else had a comment? Okay. So the other key pieces that I wanted to talk about with USCDI is that it's the most important is that this is a core data set. It's not an expansive data set. It's not an all-inclusive data set. It's a core data set whose the primary use cases are patient access to their own data and other interoperability needs that some of which are defined by ONC certification requirements and for there are other use cases that reference USCDI as well. As I think as everybody knows, it grew out of the Common Clinical Data Set to address an additional identified interoperability needs and the CCDS grew out of the MU Common data set, which by regulation only addressed basically one single use case, which is the EHR incentive program reporting requirements. That was how it was defined as the MU Common data set. So we expanded use cases and therefore expanded some of the data elements that were included in it. We have always thought about the since the concept was originated, we have always intended for this to be a modest expansion of based on identified gaps in US CDI, and we see some of those, at least some of those gaps addressed in the draft version too. But the basis of that expansion is based on not only the gaps, but also the feasibility of implementation. And there's multiple layers to that feasibility. One of the reasons that we wanted to make it a modest expansion is so that people would uptake it. If we added another 50 data elements to US CDI version 2, I think a lot of people would find that too taxing to do, especially since it is voluntary and it will remain voluntary until we publish a new final rule. And the other key point, because this is a core data set and not an expansive data set, is that the data elements in US CDI, any version, may not include all of the required data elements for any particular use case. Be it for any reporting program, any patient-centered use case, any quality or safety use cases, even payment or even documentation use cases, it may not meet all of those, and that's because it has to be a modest expansion. And then the point, Andy's point about the US CDI and info blocking. And the date for October 22nd to 22 is that after that date, all electronic health information that a system maintains will be subject to the info blocking provisions. And that's a whole other conversation about info blocking, but what the US CDI, the US CDI does pertain to info blocking up until that point, but after that it is more directly relevant to just the other interoperability needs that we've defined before. And so looking at the modest expansion, we've seen these numbers before. We had a lot of data elements and even data elements that were mature enough and reasonably feasible enough to be considered. But again, 109 data elements that came in, not to mention the other 500 that came in that didn't meet that criteria, was obviously just too many to add incrementally. And these are the criteria that we published before. This information is available in the prep sheet that I think a lot of users have used. A lot of the task force members have used to submit their submissions. But these are the criteria that we used and that we continue to use to evaluate what even is considered a level 2 data element, not even what might be included in US CDI.
We have another question from Mark Salas.
Uh-huh. Go ahead, Mark.
Yep, thanks. Off mute. So this is a good place to raise my question. It also goes back to the earlier slide where you were talking about criteria and used the word modest expansion several times. It seems to be not just a factor, but sort of a driver in the strategic thinking behind the US CDI. And I'm wondering if you can say a little more. That's, in my mind, that's not the only way to look at things. You could start with what the ecosystem needs and ask how much can we add to US CDI in order to meet those needs instead of just saying we are only going to make a modest expansion because that's the primary factor. And this level 2 description perhaps is a good illustration of why to ask that. When you've got things that or the criteria that it must be represented, that it's at scale, all of those different factors, they sort of seem pretty ready. So can you, to summarize, can you say a little more about why modest expansion is so important here?
Well, we want to, the modest expansion is intended to promote adoption. Because this is a voluntary process, we can't require it. We can't require adoption of version two, and that was made clear to us as we drafted our proposed rule, the USCDI final rule. So we recognize that a large expansion would not be adopted voluntarily, and we've got that feedback from a lot of people. There are people who commented that even this incremental change is a lot. So we're trying to promote that modest adoption. The modest increase is meant to promote adoption and begin to meet the needs of a variety of use cases.
We have another question.
Yeah, okay.
I'm sorry, Mike. We have another question from Andy. Andy?
Going on for Mark's comment as well. If you just flip back to that slide of bullet points, please. Okay, so the modest expansion promotes incremental adoption. I must confess, as a professional systems integrator in this space, that isn't how it works. Modest expansion promotes delay right up until the expansion stops, and then I can implement it all in one go. So I think if there's a sense here that by gently adding, we can gently bring forward people, that's probably not how the real world will work. That's just my sense. Mark, I'd appreciate your feedback on that as well.
No, I think we're seeing that in action. Thank you. Or we're seeing that in delay.
Hans, you had a comment?
Yes, and it's a comment and a question clarification there. During a prior discussion, there has been a suggestion to say, could the USCDI adopt at least those data elements that in both CCDA and FHIR US Core are actually already required to be supported to implement if you're part of certification. And that means is that there is a group of parties that that by adoption actually has a larger set of USCDI being supported effectively than others. Yet for other aspects and other use of USCDI, that would not be the scope of data that's included. So it's still not totally clear is that what the rationale is, that variation in scope that effectively is in play, and that there is a group that actually already is adopting additional data, what the rationale is not to consider at least the data that in the standards to interoperate, and that would be the logical choice that when you do electronic exchange, whether you're certified or not, that not be considered and that step could not be taken. That would be helpful to better understand that variation.
Hang on a second. I wonder if that echo is from me. I think it is.
You're better now.
So thanks, Hans. Because I think we've said this before, the CCDA and the US Core are not the only two uses for USCDI. They're used for other things, not only for certification criteria. They're used by other programs that may or may not need all of the data elements that are part of US Core or in CCDA. And so that's one of the reasons why we're not simply in lockstep. Also, the difference is the delta between all of the data elements that are required in CCDA and all the data elements that are required in US Core, you know, would significantly expand US CDI beyond the data elements that are required for either. Those two are not in lockstep as far as what the data requirements are, but what the must supports, the should supports, those things differ fairly significantly, and that's one of the reasons why that's actually one of the reasons why we don't have applicable standards for a lot of the data elements that are in USCDI already, is because of the differences in the data requirements or the standards requirements for the different data elements across those two different exchange standards. So it was not meant to simply be a catalog of every data element requirement for both of those.
Al, do you have more material you're going to cover, or is this it? Because we're at
time. This is the bulk of it. This is pretty much it. I know we got to move on.
We have one more question from Grace if we have time.
Okay.
Grace?
Thank you. As a newcomer here, I'm trying to listen and learn and get up to speed, but in submitting comments, the task force will know that I put in a lot of detail, and I'm sort of reflecting on major points as this is the core data set required for patient access to their own data, trying to be modest but also mindful of what, from the patient and care partner perspective, has not been reflected to date. So I'm trying to find that balance. I tried to present things from a broad spectrum, so the task force is aware of glaring gaps that I see from the patient and care partner perspective, but also being mindful on how do you select and prioritize modest changes. I'm not sure also there was a question earlier about our responsibilities to put our recommendations into the spreadsheet and how to best streamline that process. So at whatever point in this meeting, we can also touch on that. Any recommendations that may be reflected, is there a plus one? Do we add a name? Do we add our comments? How do we streamline that for the group in total?
That's great, Grace. Thank you. We'll definitely touch on that as we get to that. So I hope this was helpful, having Al kind of review this context. I think for all of us, you know, we all come to this work with a different set of priorities. And I think it's worth knowing, you know, what we can focus on and what we can't for now. So we can always come back to this. But so the next up is to take us back to our task force charges and review those quickly and kind of talk through some of this. This should be familiar to all of you, so I'm not going to read through it. Our focus really between now and the middle of April is on charge one, then we will transition to charges two and three thereafter. A question was raised in the chat by Leslie, which she and I had also discussed, which is really related to, you know, what is being included in the draft version two, or what will be included in, you know, draft version three, based on this question of, would it be more logical to bring over data classes as a whole with all of their component data elements, or does it make sense to go individual elements within a data class, building that out over time? And I think, Leslie, you've had some conversations with vendors, at least one vendor about that. Do you want to sort of contextualize that question?
Well, I hear the frustration about a lot of the synchronization or lack thereof that happens across all the use cases of data elements. And so we have classes of data that are ubiquitous in use, whether it's the provider information, the provider location, the patient demographics, and others. And so I think Clem called it stingy. Why are we being stingy? But the real issue is, if we're talking about modest or easy to adopt, is it easier to bring classes of data versus picking and choosing data elements over time? And that's really a question to the group. Hans and Sasha, I'd love to hear your comments on that.
I'd be happy to make comment is that on the one hand, that would indeed be helpful, but within a certain classes, is it really always clear what really the most important things are? And when you look at how the then supporting standards are being looked at, you see a progression and a adjustment to say, hey, within that class, there's a lot of data that could be used. We can pick on Encounter or any other one. But then there is some data within that that really has to be supported. And there's a lot of optionality then still left that the question is that okay or acceptable to be optional over time? A great example from last week that I'm sure that still resonates is that Encounter diagnosis doesn't happen to be indicated as must support, yet it's important. So how do we indicate then that from a USCDI perspective and sharing information that such elements become more important and therefore should not be left to optional? On the side, whether everybody has that data naturally or not, but so how do you do that? So I think it's a very challenging question that just mentioning the classes, I don't think is enough. Having to go to all the details is too much. It's somewhere in between so that we recognize a key topic like encounter diagnosis that otherwise might not be included by somebody because the standard says it's optional. How do you know and how do we collectively know that it's actually an expectation to do that? So I don't think we can stop at class. We have to go somewhere at some level of attributes to make sure there is that minimum set within that there is no ambiguity as to what the expectation is. Yes, there are questions about maybe not every program needs it. The other part is that maybe not every stakeholder needs it or could support it. Is everybody going to have claims or is everybody going to have explanation of benefits or other things? So there are those stratification questions that we still have, but there needs to be a basic understanding ultimately as we grow to EHI, what is it that we exactly expect that is now fully exchangeable without question? And what is data that is not in that group because it has other purposes as well? So I think it's unavoidable.
Thank you for those comments, Hans. And I think that we're gonna have to struggle with putting some of that down so that we can include it in our report back to HITECH. So let's think about how to draft that up. I know you did a great job drafting some other detailed comments this week. So we'll have to come back to that. Okay. So as I said at the beginning, and Clem, I see your hands up, but let me just sort of get this out. We really do have a presentation to make to HITECH next week on Wednesday the 10th. We have the rest of this meeting and next week's meeting to pull together what we're going to share. And I think that realistically, we should be able to share our recommendations related to tasks 1A and B. But, you know, while we've cataloged a lot of ideas, we have not sort of finalized our recommendations for any of them. So that's what I'd like to do for the bulk of the rest of our meeting. I know this group can easily get caught up in deep philosophical conversations. And I hope that we can stay focused on this task so that we can have something to deliver next week. And then the 1C issue is really the large body of work, which is what are we going to recommend back to ONC that be pulled forward from version 2 into, or from level 2 into version 2, that I think we will be focusing on probably starting next week, but we're not going to do too much on that this time.
Stephen, we do have one more comment. Yeah, from Clem.
Well, I appreciate, Steve, the challenge you're facing with this herding of cats. Coming back to the question, I don't think we have the bandwidth to tackle one at a time every single thing in the classes. And wonder whether there'd be a possibility of taking the union of CDA and FHIR and then picking out a few ones that we modify and try to submit a bigger chunk. But that would be offline homework for somebody. But I just think that, you know, we're never going to get done if we take them one bite at a time.
So that's a great observation. And I think it sort of goes to what we saw in USCDI version 1, which is that I think the hope was that all of the elements would already be represented in both CDA and FHIR. I don't know, Al, do you consider that a criterion for bringing things into version 2, that they be represented in both CDA and FHIR, and would that potentially, the approach that Clem is suggesting, create kind of the denominator for what we would be considering, or was that really how you defined what you brought into level 2?
We considered whether or not the elements that we brought into version 2 did have implementation already in CCDA or FHIR or US Core, but it wasn't the only criteria. I think that answered your question.
Yeah, I think so. And I think to Clem's point, you know, if people, as we're talking through our charge 1C and looking for level 2 classes and elements to suggest be included in version 2, we certainly want to make sure that, I would think that we would want to make sure that we select those that are already in both CDA and FHIR. So thanks for that, Clem. Okay, so what we'd like to do next, a little behind schedule, is pull up the documents from the Google Drive. Just want to remind everybody while Al's pulling that up that we do have two documents, one that we have constructed collaboratively as a group, and which includes the comments that people have put voice to here. A number of you have effectively added comments to this, some rather lengthy. Some of this came from Clem, some from collaborations of others. So those comments have been captured, and I think all of us can see those. You just look for the little orange widget in the corner of the field to be able to access those. And then we also put up a second document. Al, are you going to be able to bring up the documents? I think.
I'm pulling them up. That. I'm doing it now. Let me share.
Okay, perfect. That's great. And then the second document, which is called USCDI Task Force Member Recommendations, editable. A number of you have taken the opportunity to populate. Grace, Hans, Cheryl, Leslie in particular. And I think the idea was that we would be collecting our ideas there, discussing them as a group, and then bringing them over into the shared document. So, and Grace's question, which is, you know, how do you sort of plus one something or say, yeah, I agree, thumbs up, like, I think you can certainly do that in the group document. That is to say the recommendations tracking document through a comment on a cell. I think in the member recommendations document, I would think that the easiest thing would be to add yourself as a member in column D that has an interest in something that's already been posted. I think, again, as we mentioned at the very beginning, some of Leslie's and Grace's recommendations are very similar or overlap. I think similarly, it would just be nice to keep kind of the recommendation and the justifications together. So if you have a recommendation or justification that's different than the one that was already put in there, just, you know, put your name on it, you know, with a colon perhaps, and say, you know, this is what I want to add. Okay, so did that answer your question, Grace?
Yes, I just wanted to add a comment to also if the text member is adding their name to column D, and perhaps if they have additional justifications for recommendation to also add that in column J.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think that makes sense. Does anyone feel differently? All right. So Al, I appreciate that you can't see our chat because you're now displaying. And what Al is displaying is our the shared document of our recommendations. And what I did was I went through and I sort of color-coded the charges, thinking that it would help us to kind of think this through. So I would propose that we start with those items that relate to charge 1A, and just kind of go through those and see if we have some agreement as to how we want to include or not those items as recommendations to the HITECH. So reminding you that charge 1A is a commentary that we'd like to offer on data classes and elements from USCDI version 1, including applicable standards and version updates. So that's kind of where we're starting. And I know this is sort of hard to see. What I would suggest, Al, is maybe, what I would suggest to everyone is that you pull it up yourself, if you can, on a screen and look at it in whatever magnification works for you, because it's going to be hard for us to sort of see the whole thing. I think, Al, you're probably as zoomed in as you can get, though we could probably live without the date column. Then you might be able to zoom a tiny bit more. Whatever works. I mean, I can read that on my screen, and I hope others can too. So the first item here, and I'm going to just try to have at this, and Leslie, you watch for hands if people want to jump in. It was Dan's recommendation from our first meeting about applicable standards and his comment that there's going to be a new version of LOINC before ONC publishes V2, and wouldn't it be nice if that were referenced as an applicable standard? And I think we talked about this, Al, and I think you said that was likely to occur. Can you just clarify so that we can capture that as a recommendation?
Yeah, that was our intent. We wanted to publish the most recent versions of standards, the applicable standards across the board. Unless there was some objection to a particular version of an updated standard, that was our intent. Dan, regarding the June 21 version, only because it's so close to our publication date, there's a chance that it can't be, but I'm pretty sure that we would be able to incorporate that most recent update. We did that with version 1. We published standards that were as late as January of the year of 2020. So I think that's likely, and that would be our intent to produce the most have the most updated standards available at the time of publication.
Well, this is the time I thought that it already was settled that vendors could always be encouraged. They were encouraged to take the latest one, or they didn't have to ask permission.
That's right, Clem. On an individual basis, they can update individual standards, but USCDI is a collection of them, and so if you were to update to USCDI version 2, you'd have to update all of the applicable standards to say that you're updated to version 2.
Right. But the issue about being able to use the latest standard is moot because you can do it for the coding system.
So it's a little different, but that's fine. I think the question that I have then is simply, do we need to include this in our recommendations back to HITECH and the ONC, or since this is already ONC's intent, can we just, leave it at that? Does anybody feel strongly that this should be included in our recommendations?
Well, it wouldn't hurt. Make it
okay.
Clear.
Very good. And I'm capturing this in real time to the right under task force discussion and then the next one over task force decision. So, if we can display the, I'll shrink down some of the columns to make it easier to see. Okay, good. The next item 1A, also from, sorry?
Stephen, just a quick procedural question. If I understood the instructions correct, I put in C2 my name with agreed on the TF number. Is that what you were looking for? That if you go through it, that's where we put it?
I think that's fine. I don't think it's necessary. I don't think everybody needs to agree. We're certainly interested in disagreement, but I think in the end we're going to assume that everybody agrees. Our goal is to come up with a shared recommendation.
And Stephen, you could capture support, individual or collective support, under the task force discussion column as well. I know that Hans, you can't edit that particular any of the cells, but we could capture support or lack of support in the discussion part.
Right, and we can add comments to just clarify that if you want to. Okay, got it.
Okay, so let's see if we can stay on a roll here. The next one was also Dan's, related to assessment and plan of treatment, asking for clarification. And I believe that Mark and Dan are working on that. Would either one of you like to comment?
This is Mark. Happy to jump in. I took a look at going into Dan's comment in more detail. He helped us out by putting it in writing on the website, and thought that it might benefit if we worked together quickly, since I understand time sensitive, and tried to come up with a joint understanding of the issue and what might be a good recommendation back to the entire task force. Dan, that was an email I sent late last night. Dan may not even have had a chance to see it. So, Dan, welcome. Any thoughts you might have?
Sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to come back on that one. Yep.
Great. And I think, you know, if you guys can turn something around over the course of the week, we can review it at our meeting next week and still probably include it, if not in the slides that we distribute to HITECH the following day, at least in our voiceover. So that, thank you for that. Terry O'Malley submitted the next couple of comments. Sorry, Les, is that you? No, okay. Was there a comment from somebody? Okay. Terry submitted the next two, and I think we did have a chance to discuss some of them. The first, on row four, the notion of laboratory tests and whether, you know, we should sort of try to squeeze in other kinds of test results under this data class of laboratory tests, whether it should appropriately include cardiac testing, pulmonary testing, sleep labs, et cetera, and if it should not. Because, of course, those, you know, there's a cardiac lab and a pulmonary lab, you know, but I think the common usage of the word lab is the laboratory that does hematologies and chemistries and pathologies and whatnot. But the question was if those could or should be included within the definition of laboratory tests, and if not, should there be new data classes or elements introduced to capture those additional results. So any thoughts from either Al or other task force members? Clem?
Well, I very much support the sentiment that we should get those other damn tests in because they're all, you know, they're so important and they're not that much harder, but they're not laboratory tests, which typically are things that require specimens. So I don't think we can confuse it, although I love his idea. I think we should push to get regular all diagnostic tests being delivered. Patients are supposed to get them now by law, so it doesn't seem like it would be that big a leap, but it's the issue about the size of the things we ask for. It's not a lab test by most definitions.
Any other thoughts?
So as I was going through this, I came up with circumstances like this where I wasn't sure where certain things fell, and there's no examples in the draft to look it up. So a question like this, my gut is that this should be procedures, but where would I, as a newcomer and a layperson, go to double check that? Is it in the codes or in the standards? How do I go about looking into that?
These should be diagnostic reports and/or observations. With results. If it's without results, that's a whole longer discussion. And fire procedures are really things that are invasive.
And Grace, I think we do differentiate the procedure from the result. The knowing that a procedure, you know, was ordered, was performed, was paid for is different than actually having the result of that procedure. So I think in that sense, they're considered somewhat separate.
This is Leslie. We have two questions, first from Daniel and then from Mark. But before we move on, I do think the other point that Grace was making is that having some sort of example that can be referenced from any one of the tables in the USVBI so someone can see what that looks like in real time, what a report looks like specifically, might be quite helpful. So I think that's what she was suggesting. Is that correct, Grace? Okay,
yeah.
Super. And so, Daniel, we have a next question from you.
Yeah, I was going to concur with Clem. Love the idea of the expanded diagnostic test. In the context of LOINC, the short and sweet version of how we define, you know, a laboratory test is basically, you know, a test or measurement performed on a specimen removed from the patient. And that's different than, say, a pulmonary function test or some other, you know, sort of formal testing that can be done without taking something out of the patient. I would also agree with Grace's point that having sort of those core anchor points and definitions, particularly for procedures, would be extremely helpful because that one in particular, I've seen a lot of confusion about how do you define what a procedure is. In general, FIRES and HL7's historic perspective has been it's an activity with an intent to alter the physiologic state of the patient. Bigger point, it'd be great to have a definition with some examples. I think it would help a lot of people.
Great. So in terms of our recommendation around this, it sounds like there's support for the sentiment of assuring that cardiac, pulmonary, what have you, other kinds of procedures that result in results should be shared, but it doesn't really belong under laboratory testing because they're not laboratory testing by definition, and therefore it seems like this really becomes not a task 1A, but a task 3, where we're talking about what should be considered for future versions of USCBI. Is that acceptable to people?
Yeah. Stephen, this is Al. I just wanted to point out to task force members that diagnostic studies and exams is a data class that was submitted by CMS in support of the quality measurement work that they do and they require. And that was a level 2 data element. So if folks can look at that and consider whether or not it becomes a recommendation to add diagnostic studies exams, which does include results, by the way, according to the definition for that data element. I'll put the link to the.
Well, that sounds like a big doorway in which we can get these done. Let's do it.
So okay. If it were to be a recommendation and that particular data element seemed to fit the bill, then the recommendation would be a 1C recommendation to add diagnostic studies exams data element to V2.
Hallelujah.
And I can't put a link in the chat. Well, here I can do this. This is the data element. It's the diagnostic studies exams. Can you guys see the USCBI screen?
It's yes. Teeny.
Okay. How's that, Clem?
Oh, great. Well, that's the answer. So
that would be the if that could be a recommendation from the task force to add diagnostic imaging to, you know, to, again, that would constitute a gap in USCDI, and the recommendation could be to add that data element to maybe even a data class to USCDI.
Yeah, no, that's great. I think we get it. So there's going to be a lot of these things where there are data elements in level 2 that we want to recommend moving to V2. That's our task 1C. So we're gonna update this one. This is no longer task 1A. This is now task 1C, and we'll update that over time. Okay.
So, thank you, Ed.
Again, I want to move on.
Okay, so Mark has one question, Stephen.
Mark
has a question as well.
Thanks. I think in light of the conversation, I'll pass. Thank you.
Okay. And I hope you appreciate my color scheme. I'm doing reverse rainbow order for my colors. All right. So the next one under 1A was Terry's recommendation about provenance. This one got a plus one from Cheryl. Thank you. That there's a need for a data element to specify when data was reviewed and by whom. Again, this is really a recommendation for a new data element. So even though I categorize this as 1A because it was a comment on a data class and element that was, or a data class that was included in version 1, I think it really should have been included as a 3 because we can't do this. It's not in our charge to recommend new data elements. So I'm going to update that. And do people have comments on this?
I think we should pass on it. It's very complicated because it's not even clear whether it's reviewed like in lab, and there's already ways that choose your mark, or this is someone in the clinic looking at it, and then it's much more complicated. So I don't think we can just bite this off without a lot of work.
Yeah, I'm with Clem on this one. Provenance shouldn't be a discrete data class or element. It should be something that's a bit more ubiquitous and spread across everything, and it's definitely not for quick. We need to get something into HITAC for consideration. This is worthy of an entire work stream that ONC drives separately.
Yeah, but it is a data class, and there are elements. So I mean, I don't think we're going to undo that. But I think your point is well taken. I like Clem's word. It's complicated.
Can I just add that for whenever this is considered in the future to reflect the by whom might be by what. Sometimes review might be an automated process.
Yeah, that's really good point. Okay, good.
Maybe one other
comment there, Al? Go ahead, Paul.
I was just going to say that for this particular data element, the data review is on the receiving end, and provenance references the sending of the source in. So I'm not sure if that's an appropriate data element for provenance.
Exactly. It's complicated.
Well said, Clint.
Thank you, Mark. Oh, no. Thank you, Al.
And probably also is that HIT system may not capture it. They may, but they may not pass it along. It's not going through the entire chain, so agreed with the complicated part.
Good. All right. We're on a roll. We're going to keep going. We're focusing on the 1As. The next one was Clem's comment about diagnostic imaging. Kind of similar to Terry's comment about labs here, does imaging extend beyond radiographic images to include visible light images, essentially, and or videos, and comments on this?
Well, I had assumed it did, and I heard affirmatively that it did, and it's called diagnostic imaging, not radiology imaging, but let's see what the rest say.
Al, do you have a ONC position on this?
I'm just reviewing the data element description, and it's imaging, diagnostic imaging, it does include more than radiographic, and that, I think that, I'm just reviewing the data element description in USCGI, but it's in any imaging procedure, and how it's described in US Core, I think, is pretty close to what it ought to look like. And so there's three different categories: imaging, I think cardiology, and one other one might be GI. But anything that's imaging, including visible light images.
And including
it includes
video, correct?
I don't know.
It's an imaging modality, but we're not talking about the image element itself, image file. We're talking about the test or the result report.
Right.
I would have a clarifying question on that. because at times we're talking about it's any imaging or it's any diagnostic imaging. Is the distinction being used that diagnostic images are those that are used and based upon which a diagnosis is made versus other images that are in place that could be used for illustrative purposes but are not used to actually make the diagnosis? Is there a distinction that you're using there in the way you describe? Because I wasn't sure as you were going, use the terms, whether you were going back and forth between the two or whether it's all together. Because there's a distinction.
Well, it says diagnostic imaging. I think that's says it, what it is.
I would agree with you, Clem, based on reading it, but I thought I heard Al mention a couple of things that sounded like it went beyond that by referencing imaging in general.
But that's I think that the data element, let me just look and see which column this is here, data class. So the, what did I just do? Okay. So the question in H6 is, could the data class include images beyond radiographic images? And the answer is yes. Any imaging procedure that has a result that produces a result that's used for diagnostic diagnostic purposes would be included in this.
Okay.
And Al, you just clarified that this was a result, a test, and a report, and not the images themselves. Is that correct?
Yeah. And the image was a recommendation for images to be included. The image file itself, which is another data element under diagnostic imaging, I think that it was added. It was recommended by someone during the submission process, and that just wasn't added for a variety of reasons.
And we're not going to add it. I think we're keeping the diagnostic imaging to be the narrative, the order, and the report. Correct?
I think we're going to get to the issue of whether narrative and report are the same thing or inclusive.
So here again, to put this one to bed, this we have what we asked for, the clarification. Does this need to go into our report to HITECH, or would it just be unnecessary?
Well, if like a commitment to get some little examples into the definition so people...
Yeah. Yeah, my recommendation would be to include it because what we'd like to see is it reflected in the text of the USCDI because if we have this question, I'm sure others do too.
Okay.
So to Grace's point, though, do we want to clarify that in the definition of what we're calling diagnostic imaging, that includes screening or excludes screening? Just be deliberate and specific.
Screening, when you say screening, do you mean, for example, screening mammograms? I mean, is that what you're referring to? It's still a diagnostic image,
this should be explicit. And to Clem's point, colonoscopies, retinal images, cardiac ultrasounds, they all come under DI as well.
Yeah,
yes.
That's what I heard.
And to Hans's point, if a narrative includes reference to another type of supportive device, like a 3D modeler being included, that's just part of the narrative, not an explicit separate report. And that's cool.
Now, be aware that a lot of these have images in the paper report or PDF or whatever. You know, the picture will be in there. It's certainly true of polyps and colonoscopy and stuff.
Okay, I want to press on if we can. So I think we've clarified this. Row 6, I want to keep going on the 1As. There's no more 1As on this tab. So we're going to go to the 1Bs. All right, so let's go to...
If I would push this, I would give up on this one that's got my name in it and let Hans run it. He and Hans developed a response.
Oh, you're talking about row 7 now. Okay, yes. So row 7, that's fine. Yes, Hans did add a nice long commentary in column J. Al, can you bring that up so that people can see that? Don't think you can.
I don't know that I can display the whole thing, but it's here.
Yeah, you have to kind of scroll through it. Hans, do you want to give us the upshot here?
Sure. So we went back and forth between Ricky, Clem, myself, we were asked to put in a little bit of a clarification recommendation together. So the summary of that would be is that agreement with having the diagnostic imaging section and moving the narratives for lab and for diagnostic imaging and narratives to those respective sections. A suggestion that crosses both diagnostic imaging and the laboratory class to not use the term narrative, focus on a report. And that as part of the report, that it's clarified that the report is inclusive of narrative notes to summarize findings, impressions, conclusions, while also including information that may be encoded qualitative and or quantitative in nature. And then we put in a little bit of the breakdown what it then would look like there. But the essence is not to use the term narrative, not to separate that out, have it part of report in either of those areas, so diagnostic imaging report, laboratory report, pathology report, and then as part of define a report to indicate it's a combination of inclusive of narrative findings, impressions, conclusions, and encoded qualitative and or quantitative data that is pulled together there in context.
So there's another twist on this, because I think there is already a Collins calling imaging report by itself, and that specifies a whole bunch of codes that can be used as to name the report. If this is going to be a new creature, it'll create ambiguity too. So I'm not sure what you're meaning exactly, Hans. Is this a new term, or is it just in the same box where we've talked previously about diagnostic studies?
In the same box. It's in the same box. So if in the box of diagnostic imaging, the suggestion would be that there is the diagnostic imaging order and there's the diagnostic imaging report, but there is not a diagnostic imaging narrative separately in that box. Okay. Similarly, in laboratory, there would be a laboratory report, pathology report, but not a laboratory report narrative and pathology report narrative. That's where we were starting to go with the roundabout.
All right. I think this pretty does a good job capturing the discussion that we've had over a series of meetings. And what I would propose is that we go ahead and include this in our high-tech recommendations. Does anyone feel otherwise?
Everybody's nodding.
Yes, everybody's nodding. And I'm sorry, my video went on the fritz again, it's not that I don't want to look at you. Okay, the next one up in row 8 was related to laboratory report narrative. I assume we will address this similarly, correct?
It's done, yeah. It's all one.
Correct.
Okay, good. All right, in row 9. And also there were similar comments, I think, on this that Grace included in the accessible spreadsheet and possibly Leslie. So if you guys feel that your concerns have been addressed, maybe you can just delete that from the other spreadsheet so we have less to go over in the future. On row 9, okay, we've got about 15 more minutes before we go to public comment. I just want to make sure we're tracking here.
Can I ask one question about the lab report narrative?
Is that Ricky or Dan?
This was Dan.
Dan, sorry. Okay, sorry.
My question was whether for Clem and the others, there was a separate thread around the potential overlap between lab result values and lab report. Was that part of this proposal or discussion, or is that separate?
I thought it was already separated, but maybe Hans could something.
Yeah, it was separate. We did not specifically talk about that. So if there's still other topics there, we would have to discuss that. We're not intending to lump that together.
Well,
Well, we should ideally see what the next version would look like.
Right.
We...
So I think if I hear you correctly, Dan, is that if you see the notes and it has that, what would it result in the updated categories? The absence, it does include tests and value results in the laboratory area. So, but we did not specifically talk about it. We just focused on the report aspect of it, but the test and the value results still there. And on the diagnostic imaging side is where you see that the narrative one was dropped because it was suggested to be part of report. Does that help clarify to the extent that we talked about it?
Yeah, it does. I think there was a separate thread about potential confusion around the values versus narrative results.
If there's
no
specific
language, Dan, if
there's specific language you'd like us to include in the high-tech recommendations, please put that in as a comment on the cell 8J, and we'll capture that, okay?
Got it.
Super. Okay, Dan, the next three are all yours. This had to do with care team members, provider name, identifier, and role. For provider name, I think the suggestion was to change it to care team member name, same for identifier, care team member ID, same for role, care team member role. So it's a labeling change, and I think, you know, that's a sensitivity to what, you know, Grace and others have registered, which is that care team members certainly go well beyond providers, and Clem has clarified that other individuals can still get the appropriate IDs. So I think this is something that we feel pretty comfortable with. Dan, I think you also suggested elevating provider role to version 2. So those are kind of two separate issues. So that's a 1C issue, but let's address the 1B issue and then come back to this and say when we get to 1C. So does anyone have any concerns about us recommending to the HITAC that these labels get changed to care team member as opposed to provider?
Nope.
Mark, you had a comment. Is that relevant to this?
It may be if I was following the conversation, just flagging that there are many different elements that jump back and forth between individual, provider, care team, all quote unquote, and to see if this change might clean up some other data elements. No need to look at that now on this particular recommendation, though. Just flagging.
That it could help with overlap.
Correct.
Yep. Okay.
And clean up. This might take care of some other things.
All right. And again, I'm trying to capture our discussion as we go along. So if people see things that I'm getting wrong, please let me know.
And Stephen, on row 11, agreed to include that, to go to care team member. Using the term role as part of the definition of that would be very helpful to indicate that it's the role of the member in the team. And the reason for that to being as precise as possible is that when you start to translate into the standards and what's available, one might otherwise go to a construct that is not appropriate to be used.
Agreed.
Look, can I just jump in on that?
Go ahead.
There are many things about care team members that are important. They're flagged in other data elements like contact information, demographics, that kind of thing. Are we specifically just limiting to role in this at this particular point? And if so, just making sure that the other things get included in some way. Thank you.
So I think, Mark, you're referring to additional data elements, right? And this is a specific data element, which is role. Other data elements that we might want in the future would need to, you know, be submitted and leveled.
I'm raising the question primarily because a broader, what could be read as a broader term, care team member, is now being called care team member role, which would be, could be seen as being just a subset of what was broader. That's why I'm flagging the question.
So the member itself is already in version one. So that one's established. In draft version two, they added provider name and identifier. So we're just talking about changing the label to care team member name and identifier. And then in level two, there was included provider role, which we're also suggesting the change in the label. And now we're going to subsequently make a 1C recommendation to pull that into version two. Does that make sense?
And Mark, I think it's the definition is done more precisely along lines that I suggested, then it should be clear that it's the role of the care team member in that team, of the person in that team. Because otherwise I would agree with you that might start to look differently than what the intent is. And it might otherwise lead to a different construct in the standards to support that.
Just a point of information that is, if everybody used the NPI, you'd have the address, you have all the other stuff connected directly to it, publicly available.
Yeah, the challenge is that a care team member, a caregiver of the patient, while you indicated before that it's technically possible they could get an MPI, but the caregiver of a patient might not have that, or it will not have that.
I expect, yeah.
Okay, good. Moving on, sticking with 1B. I think this row 16, I think, again, was the issue of the narrative. There is a question, should granular guidance be included in USCDI and or in implementation guides? I think this was a point that Ricky raised. You know, does this belong in USCDI or does it belong somewhere else? But I think, again, our decision was that we want to, for path, lab, and imaging, make the same clarification. Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay, good. All right. Okay, I think we've captured that. Okay, now we got six more minutes. I want to come back and touch on the 1Cs. I think we already talked about row four. Now let's come back to row 11 and just ask the question, does everybody agree that care team member's role, the care team member role should be elevated from level two to version two when ONC publishes that? Does anybody disagree? Okay, yes. So well, we're going to end up with a lot of these, right? Add to version two. Okay, so we've taken care of that. Again, sticking with our 1C theme, Terry recommended under the laboratory data class, clarifying the boundary of laboratory tests. So it's really the same. Oh, we already talked about this. I'm sorry. We changed it to 1C. Let's keep going. Row 13. Dan, care team members, provider identifier, add identifier type. We had a lively discussion about this. This was a recommendation to add that from level two into version two. And Grace, you commented on this.
Yeah, I think, Stephen, would it be all right if I commented quickly?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think the right way to do this would be that it would be a part of the overall identifier because data element, because as we discussed, typically any ID data type element has these two components, the identifier itself and then the system or thing that it is that created that identifier. So I don't know that it necessarily needs to be a separate thing. It needs to be carried along with the identifier, I think, is the main point. So that's kind of, if I were making a recommendation, it would be just to recognize that as a data type, it is covered as sort of a two-part or sometimes a three-part, if there's a label in there as well as a code and a coding system. But it's sort of included in the master identifier thing.
All right. So is everybody comfortable with including this in our high-tech recommendations?
As an update to the tech.
Hans has a comment.
Sorry, yeah, as a part of the definition of the identifier agreed, it's not needed to do that separately. And that might lead to incorrect assumptions.
Perfect. All right. The next one, row 14, and I'm pushing us to get to public comments, came from Michelle. In fact, the last three did. Clarifying time and counter time. I think this was, well, there were a number of comments about this. I think, Grace, you included one as well. This needs work, right? We don't know what this means exactly. Was it scheduled time, actual time, you know, duration, et cetera? I think that we're not going to solve this. I don't think we have time to put together, excuse the pun, a specific recommendation, but I think that we should include in our high-tech recommendations that this be clarified for implementers. Does anyone want to add more to that or a counter proposal?
It might be fixed already, either in the Medicare forms for submitting encounters and or by FHIR. I kind of vaguely think that you can have an interval and that with or without both ends. We might be able, it may be solved. So maybe just we could hold it and take a quick look. But I don't know for sure though.
So, I think the fact that it's included, you know, that it might be specified in greater detail in FHIR doesn't mean that it's specified in greater detail in USCDI, right? Go ahead.
Correct.
I think if I could for a minute, I think that when we asking for clarity is great. We'd love to be able to provide a more clearly readable, understandable standard. I think the point of reference should be what's the current data element definition for encounter time, which is a little bit broad and more inclusive, and it reads specifies the date and time associated with an encounter for clinical context. This would include admission and discharge date for hospital encounter or a time date for an office visit or appointment. And so it could include a range, duration, but it applies to both. It would apply to both inpatient and outpatient. And so the fact that we included a timing element in around encounters is, I think, the key point. And so referencing the definition as listed, I think, is a good place to start.
It doesn't seem.
We have one more. No, I agree with you, Clem. Yeah, Hans had a comment and a question before we go to public comment. Do we have time, Stephen?
Sure.
The question comment that I would have is that agreed that generally the way Al described it is that allows for a period or a single point in time as appropriate, inpatient stay or outpatient visit. I think the comment that Stephen made about is it the scheduled daytime, is it the actual daytime, I think that will be helpful to clarify that when we talk about the encounter, that we are talking about the actual start and possibly end time rather than scheduled. So that would be helpful to clarify that as part of the definition. And if we're talking about appointments at some point in time, that is being looked at perhaps in a separate discussion.
Correct. So I think it's fair to say that we want to request greater clarification in future versions, but at this point, it kind of is what it is based on the current definition. Is that fair?
Some clarification can be had by just being more specific that when we talk about it, it's not the scheduled date and time.
Yeah,
Okay. It's the encounter time, which means the one that really happened.
Yeah, the actual time that it started.
Okay, we are at time, if you will, for public comments. Operator, go ahead.
Operator,
thank
could
you,
you please open up the public comment line?
Yes, if you would like to make a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to take your comment out of the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment while we pull for comments. There are no comments at this time.
Very good. Thank you so much. So we've got just a few minutes left. I would like to see if we can complete Michelle's prior recommendations, which had to do with encounter disposition and encounter location. And she had recommended elevating these from level 2 to version 2. She made a good argument that these were useful for CMS quality reporting, and I think other people sort of weighed in that they also felt that these would be valuable. Does anybody want to weigh in one way or the other about whether we should include encounter disposition and location in our recommendations to
do it.
Be in
do
version
it.
2?
I see a lot of nodding.
Does anybody feel differently? All right, wonderful. So I'm going to
give you 2 gold stars for having gotten us through this. You deserve it.
Well, there's more to be done. So what I'd like to do, though, I'm really quite pleased that we got through this. Leslie and I are going to be working with the ONC team to actually start to put together some slides to capture these recommendations so we have a sense of the format and the content. And then what I want to do next time is do the same kind of a line-level review of whatever is left in the task force member recommendations. I'm counting on Grace and Leslie to collaborate and collapse their duplicates into individual items. I think some of what Cheryl added probably might fit into those. It might be different. I see that Andy's starting to have his way with this document. So I would really invite people also to fill out column B, the task force charge number, because at least for me, it's easier to think about it that way. Are we commenting on things from version 1? Are we commenting on things that were added to version 2 draft? Or are we commenting on things that are in level 2 that we want to pull forward into version 2 draft? So again, our primary focus for our high-tech presentation will be 1A and 1B relevant issues as opposed to 1C. So my hope is to get through all the things that are flagged as 1A and 1B next week so that we can include those. I would tend not to want to include any of our 1C recommendations in the high-tech presentation on the 10th, because I think that's going to just be a whole body of work. And, you know, the things that today we said, yes, you should bring it forward, we might change our mind as we're looking at a broader group of them. So my goal is to have 1A and 1B recommendations ready for high tech on the 10th. Questions? I think we have another slide, which is just our dates, isn't it? Do we not? Maybe not. Anyway, we are, it was the prior slide. There we go. Thank you. Yeah, so we are going to just keep on going. I don't know about the rest of you, but I think we have plenty of work to do. We're just going to keep meeting weekly for now. Maybe we'll give ourselves a little break after April 15th. Time will tell. Any parting comments for the good of the order?
Good job, Steve.
Thank you, Clem.
Done.
It's always a pleasure. All right. Thank you, Leslie, for your partnership. We'll see you all next week.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye, guys.